Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. And today on Mages, Sages, and Seers, I continue my ongoing conversation with Frater Serpentis Satori. Today we'll be continuing our exploration of magic in popular culture. Greetings and welcome, Satori.
Hello.
Happy New Year.
Oh, Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you. And I'm looking forward to continuing our conversation on magic and popular culture, especially WandaVision.
Well, Wanda is very interesting because Wanda is one of those shows that if you actually do magic, you thought it nailed everything.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, you can't explain it to your mom.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
All the witches in my life have that problem, that they understood everything that was going on in WandaVision and that it's based on grief and that it actually does get into witchy witchcraft toward the very end. But because its premise is Wanda mind controlling an entire town and altering an entire town's reality, that's hard to explain to your mom.
We have a slight sound problem. You're fading out a little bit.
Should I try to... Is it better now?
It's better now, yes.
Okay.
It also speaks on a variety of other levels beyond magic. And for anyone who understands the psychological concept of projection, it really is like an intense lesson on how we construct our own realities, and that our realities may not be real, and our realities where we cast people to play particular roles in this imaginary scenario we have inside our head and continuously cast them to play these roles might not be healthy for them or for us.
Yeah.
I remember back in the days when I worked in the mental health field, and I used to have student interns, and I used to give them various insights or things to talk about. That was one of them. It's like whenever you see somebody use the word all, like all women, all men, all Greeks, all, whatever, they were no longer in reality. They were in a construct inside their head. And whenever someone was caught in a loop, they were repeatedly casting people to play parts in the scenario. So with a little bit of observation, you could watch that. And Wanda did that perfectly as well.
Yeah, her family is entirely created by her imagination.
Right. And we all create, to a certain degree, these roles that people assume inside our own minds. And these roles might not be what the person sees themselves doing, but it's what we see them doing and the purpose that they serve in the scenario that we're living out or that we're stuck in.
Right.
How
and I think that's what the level most people understood the show on.
Uh-huh.
And understood it as a metaphor for trying to bring everybody, the whole thing about when her brother comes back, about trying to, wouldn't you bring back your dead brother if you could?
Mm-hmm.
If you had the power to do it, wouldn't you?
And it wasn't her. They used that whole thing to tantalize the audience and to make a cheap joke about boners. So
yeah, but
they kind of wasted that, I believe.
I think they just misdirected. I think they just went for the cheap joke to go for the cheap joke for people who watch Marvel on that level.
Okay, that makes sense. How did the witch community, what did they see in it in terms of magically that they can't explain to their moms?
Well, the whole altering reality on that large a scale. Hello?
I'm here.
Okay. altering reality on that largest scale is what we all do. We just don't do it in a overt way. It tends to be a very subtle thing. But like Agatha's comment about whether it's guns or pitchforks, they're still trying to come for girls like us, struck a chord. And the fact that the military is against Wanda and is trying to eliminate her as a threat is that whole anti-witch thing in modern guise.
Yeah,
but the episode where we see Agatha's backstory was done in a very respectful way, and no one was upset about that. I was worried when I saw the episode the first time how everything was going to be handled, and it was handled well enough.
Yeah, I was curious because it was the first of the new streaming shows, you know, what direction they were taking everything in and how it was going to connect to the grander tale that they were telling, and it didn't disappoint. I saw WandaVision and immediately I wanted to own it, even though that's no longer necessary with streaming.
Yeah.
And I missed it in Target. They had it in Target briefly. Now you can't even find it on Amazon or eBay, the first season of WandaVision.
Oh, I must have missed it at Target too.
Yeah, it was in Target, and I said, I'll pick it up next time. Next time I came back, it wasn't there, so I figured, I'll pick it up on Amazon or eBay. Couldn't find it on Amazon or eBay.
Now, it's so, actually, when I was rewatching it for this episode, this is actually my third time through, because I watched it the first time when I first got Disney in May, and then I watched it with one of my housemates, and then I watched the second half to prepare for this today.
So what did you get out of the revisitings that you didn't see before?
A bunch of the nuances, and I'm the way they handled Harkness didn't need to be done that way, but they did it that way because the only other magician we've seen in the MCU is Doctor Strange. So
mm-hmm.
we needed to understand that witchcraft is real. Witches exist and have magic based on their own rules. And she's sort of the spokesperson for that point of view, because we haven't seen any of the other, because she's really only the second magic user we've seen in the entire Marvel Universe to date. A lot of her opinions are out of the box stereotypical witch opinions.
Uh huh. The rumors are that she's going to play the villain in Doctor Strange: The Multiverse of Madness.
That's what they're saying right now, but it looks like we're in for a lot of villains in Multiverse of Madness.
Did you get a chance to see Spider-Man yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. That supposedly opened the door to the Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah, by having all the villains from the other Spider-Man movies leak into the Marvel Universe.
I'm wondering why they drew the line at the movies and not with the television shows as well, because they had the Spider-Man live action, they had the Hulk, they had all sorts of shows before then.
I think they are very slowly going to do that with all of the coming Marvel TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're trying harder to differentiate between the street level MCU and the cosmic level MCU. That Hawkeye and Falcon and Winter Soldier, on some level, almost take place in a different reality than WandaVision.
In what sense? I know that in terms of the setting where it unfolds, yeah, there's the constructed reality of Wanda and then Falcon and the Winter Soldier. They're more in the real reality, this world reality.
Yeah, they're more in the military reality. Like Hawkeye is more in the New York City streets.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed Hawkeye maybe more than I enjoyed Wanda. But there's a definite difference between what Hawkeye was doing and what Loki was doing.
Yes.
And Loki was excellent.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I think they handled Loki very well, and he was a variant, the quote-unquote real Loki of the sacred timeline, sacrificed himself and redeemed himself. So this is like a variant of Loki, and it introduced the whole concept of variants and alternate timelines, and you know, why would you need or want a sacred timeline? And now that it's been broken, you know, what happens when you break it and how do you fix it? And so it dealt with a lot of really deep questions.
Yeah.
And you got to meet all the different Lokis that were there, including the Marvel.
That was
Comics
a cool
Loki.
Episode. That
yeah.
was a very cool episode, despite its weirdness. But I had tried to, the middle episode with the train, when I watched that for the second time, I understood why some of my friends said it could interchangeably have been a Doctor Who episode from a couple of years back.
Uh-huh.
Because it would have worked just as well with Dr. Capaldi and Missy as it does with Loki and Sylvie. Because Dr. Capaldi also would probably try to get the whole bar singing. That would be in the personality of that version of the Doctor.
Yeah, it's and again, if you're familiar with magic or mythology or psychology, the gods have different epithets, and Loki gave you a different way of looking at the epithets as different variants of the same deific force. And the different variants of the gods are also very different from one another, but they share a commonality which makes them part of the same god.
Right. Different gods from different versions of reality.
Right.
Different versions of Hercules from possibly even different universes.
Right. And the show Loki helped you really, really, really see that very clearly, because you had all these different Lokis interacting with one another. And that's been wrestled before by comic books. It's been wrestled by game designers. And now Marvel wrestled with it in the MCU and in their comics. In Marvel, they do something very interesting that I believe they also do in DC, but I'm not as up on DC as I am with Marvel. With Marvel, the magical universe and outer space become the same thing. And that's how that is true in the cosmic spiritualities that we've had since antiquity to the present time. But it's very interesting to see that understanding in a comic book. I'm thinking specifically of the Hercules run under Fred Van Lente and Greg Pak. Hercules and the God Squad were going to the realm of dream. And it was handled like an outer space voyage, but on a regular, like, ancient trireme.
Yeah. Because you can do that in comic books. And that was very influential at the time because it showed a lot of people that you can do that.
Mm-hmm. And it was a theosophy of sorts. And I don't know if you picked up any of the new encyclopedic Marvel material. I haven't picked up the one with the MCU yet, the history of the MCU. But I picked up some of the other ones, the encyclopedias and so forth, and they're approaching the level of like the secret doctrine in their complexity and in the amount of stuff that they cover that's now part of the official Marvel mythology. And it was very impressive.
Well, I mean, after Eternals, we're heading that way anyway, with Irishim and all of that crowd.
Uh-huh.
and all of the super celestials and all the other super powerful cosmic beings that are going to be sucked into the MCU momentarily.
Eternals was a movie that, again, it was very polarizing. Some people got it. Some people didn't get it. Some people liked it. Some people didn't like it. And again, everyone's entitled to like or not like something and have opinions about it. But one of the things when I watched in the theater was, oh my God, they just extended the Marvel Universe by like millions of years and added all these other, you know, dimensions to it that weren't there. And they opened the door to so many future stories. But I guess that didn't come through for everybody in their watching of the film. It just kind of, even though it wasn't as action-packed as some of the other ones, and it was kind of slow. And personally, I would have enjoyed it more as like a six-hour movie or a couple of movies, like a part one and a part two, as we've discussed.
That actually seems to be the majority opinion. The majority opinion, yeah, of the people who talk to me about these things. No, I have a job where I work with the public, and I was recently given a mask that says Wakanda Forever. And I'm a guy who wears a leather jacket with long hair. So when people see me wearing a Wakanda Forever mask, they think of Bucky Barnes.
Yeah.
So people talk to me about the MCU. And the majoritarian opinion from people who have talked to me about Eternals is what you said about it being a TV show. That probably would have worked better as a spinoff of Loki than as a movie.
Yeah.
That seems to be the opinion everybody who liked the movie had. As much as we liked it, it would have been better if it had been done in a six-episode format, and then maybe we could have seen it from different characters' points of view and had it done more Game of Thrones style. That probably would have been better, and that probably would have tightened up a lot of the issues people have with it.
Yeah, because you're dealing with all these characters. There were 10 Eternals, plus you had like Dane Whitman and you know, so forth. And you had Crow, which they didn't do justice to Crow at all. So you had all these different people and a being to keep track of. And then you had this entire long history that they had on the planet, and then what they were doing now. So there was way too much. It was spread. It was like a small piece of butter on a big piece of bread. And again, it was admirable, and I liked it, and Athena liked it for different reasons. But I'm a big Eternals fan. She's not. So we both enjoyed the movie, and we're looking forward to watching it now streaming with all the bells and whistles.
Well, she probably liked it for the reason. She probably liked it for the reason my Amazon friends liked it. The Amazon and Witchy girls liked it. Because that version of Athena is very cool. And they actually did go for the Peter Pan reference.
Yes. And they got into the whole ancient astronauts, ancient aliens, as it's called now, thing. So it opened the door to more of that in the Marvel universe. And it totally turned the Infinity Gauntlet saga because if they hadn't undone what Thanos did, the Celestial would not be emerging from the planet. So in a weird way, you know, Thanos was saving planets by destroying half of all life on the planets.
Yeah. But that's a very interesting thing to read, too. There's a guy on YouTube who does the Villain Was Right series, which the most popular ones are, of course, Zemo Was Right and Darth Vader Was Right. And the Zemo Was Right one is one I almost sort of agree with.
Well, because
Zemo says essentially, Zemo says superheroes lead to fascism, is Zemo's point of view. Super soldiers inherently lead to Superman, which inherently leads to fascism. Inherently leads to autocracies and fascism. Because no one elects their superheroes. And superheroes can, you know, throw cities around. what's an everyday person going to do against someone who can throw a city around or mind control a whole town?
That's the point of The Boys, parody contemplation on the whole superhero genre.
I haven't seen that yet. I need to see that, but I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, that is, it was one of those things, it's like, let's check it out, and we've become fans of The Boys. Athena actually read all the comic books. I haven't done that, but she's read all the comics. It's basically the DC iconic heroes, a contemplation of them and the implications of them, and it touches on some of the things that you've been talking about. Now,
someone explained that it was basically all of the corporatized version of the Justice League.
Yeah. Now, you'd wanted to bring some things up that we'd started to talk about during our last conversation that you felt it was important to include in this conversation. So before we get lost in comic books and the comic book universes, I guess let's just redirect there a little. This conversation has been one we both enjoy, and it's lasted for years. So we can return to that. We will return to that.
Oh, yeah, we need to talk about what is magic.
Right.
Well, magic in its most basic sense is just energy backing up intent. And the better you are with both energy and intent, the better you are at magic.
And as Crowley pointed out, magic need not be what people imagine it to be. And I had conversations with Donald Tyson a few years back, too. Like with bodybuilding is magic. You're using specific tools.
Well, yeah, but people use that to not believe in magic because they think – they tell me I'm not a real wizard because I can't do what Doctor Strange does in the movies.
Okay. Yeah, people have a misconception about magic, but it is that doesn't discredit magic. It supports it because, again, you're doing routines and you're doing them on a schedule to have a certain result, and either your result works or doesn't work, and then if it doesn't work, you need to do like something else and keep experimenting, and you have all these people who've written material on the correct way to do it, but until you learn your own way, again, you need to practice and find what works, and you produce change. You create a body that people would not normally be able to attain without having done the process. And you do need focus, concentration, and certainly intent. You need to be able to visualize to see what it is that you need to do. You need to keep to particular schedules with eating and with movement. So it's very much a magical operation.
Well, yeah, that's part of most of the people I know who do magic are actually fairly physically fit and pretty strong for their build and size. Because
mm-hmm.
you do have to have that level of, because you do go through similar things. Well, I mean, that's back to the conversation about meat eating, is that part of when you get to a certain level of magic, you start being much more careful about what you eat, much more careful about how often you drink, and everything else, because you're trying to keep track of your energy. You're trying to make sure your energy, you have enough energy to do the harder things you do. Because I was doing a difficult ritual about a year ago, and I told one of my friends that I've been working with someone off and on for almost 20 years, and
uh-huh.
her not being around, I felt like I was carrying the couch up the stairs by myself. That when you're dividing energy among a group, it's easier to carry the couch up the stairs.
Right.
If you're doing it by yourself, sometimes it does feel like you're carrying a couch up 12 flights of stairs all by yourself.
Now, so basically that's the one aspect of magic. And again, your intent needs to be strong, and you need to be able to visualize what it is that you're trying to bring about. You need to work through your own stuff. Otherwise, if you're like prone to sabotage yourself. 1 second. I don't usually have shows at this time, so I get dings on Facebook, and I'm getting calls, so sorry about that.
That's a meditation. Carly tells you need to be able to maintain that focus state at a Union Station during rush hour. You can't let distractions get to you when you're doing your ritual.
Right. And it's the same thing with lifting weights or bodybuilding. You can't allow distractions to get to you. And if you're at a point in your bodybuilding, let's say, or in your magic on that level, you have to watch exactly what you're eating. And that includes not only macronutrients, but micronutrients. And as with magic, there's a lot of contradictory lore. There's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of stuff you also need to work through.
Lot of that stuff is purifying your mind in the same way that bodybuilding purifies your body.
A lot of people see religion spirituality as different from magic. I've always found that they're kind of one and the same, at least as far as my experience has been. And that a lot of things that people call a prayer, the different ways they pray and they use a prayer are not the same as, but very similar. The skill set you need to do that is very similar.
That's why the better term is practitioner anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's why practitioner is a much better term than witch or wizard or any of those other nickel words. In New Orleans, someone's a practitioner, because a Catholic priest is a practitioner in the same way a voodoo doctor is. They're just
right.
They just have very different practices. Their daily practice looks very different from the outside. It's not really all that different from the inside, but from the outside, it looks extremely different.
Yeah, I found that to be very true during my my ages of wandering and experimenting with different things. That and this is in fact how we met. The conversations that we had about Afro-Caribbean magic and Greek mythology and ancient religion. The trappings are different. The cultural trappings are different, but the underlying skills are the same. It's like, I guess to use a bodybuilding analogy again, whether you're using dumbbells, barbells, or kettlebells, they're all different ways of accomplishing the same thing, but the principles are the same. And pretty much you're going to stumble on the same formulas and get the same results in time. But it's like a Tower of Babel situation.
That's also going back to the polytheistically, on some level, the definition of religion really amounts to a code of ethics and a dietary code.
Right.
What separates different kinds of polytheists really are different virtues that different pantheons think are more important than others, and a dietary code. Tony Soprano's comment about, if the Hindus are right, I eat steaks, I'm going to hell anyway.
Right.
On some level, that the longer you're in polytheism and the more open you are about your polytheism, the more you realize that when you go to heart judgment, you're judged on the code of ethics of the gods you follow. And that's part of why the weird dietary stuff is there. Because in a lot of the Afro-Caribbean religions, you're not allowed to eat a certain food because it's sacred to your god.
Right.
And inversely, in Celtic paganism, you're supposed to eat things that are of the animal you get your power from.
That's very true with the Herculean path as well. Hercules, was one of his epithets was eater of beef. And you have like two of the laborers concerned with bovines, and you have a lot of the supplemental stories concerned with cows, and a lot of the folklore concerned with cows. So that's very much a part of the deific force, if you will. And Hera's cow face also.
Right.
So if someone is getting into magic for the first time, where they don't have a standard definition, where they're familiar with Harry Potter or Doctor Strange or mythical magicians through their study of mythology or ancient folklore, how would they
go and watch everything called Witchcraft 101? Go watch every. Go spend the weekend watching Witchcraft 101 on YouTube. A lot of that does contradict each other, but a lot of it doesn't. And
okay.
Then you at least have a sense of real people that really do it, really explaining. Because those of us that really do it get really tired of, then why can't you fly? If you can see the future, what am I about to do?
Well, you could fly on some level. There's astral travel, so you can't
right.
fly. And in terms of the future is a variable thing. You know, sometimes you get flashes of things, but those are things you can avoid if you are able. And you don't need to. You're not stuck in.
Yeah, but that's just sophomorism. That's just, those are people who are non-believers who have no intention of ever believing, just trying to make it all go away so they don't have to believe it's real.
And unbelief is a powerful force too, as has been shown in experiments with quantum physics, from what I understand of it. Basically, whether light is going to be a wave or a particle really depends on the person looking at it and what they believe.
All of magic is that anyway, because you're trying to do what Wanda succeeded in doing. You're trying to alter reality to be what you want it to be. She just did it on a very large scale in the TV show.
But everybody, to one extent or another, wants to alter reality so that it could be what they want it to be. And they use different techniques. One of the most popular in our culture, for instance, is manipulation. You know, they'll use like psychological manipulation to get what they want. And we're watching that play out on the global arena. Even just denying real reality or consensus reality, I guess would be a better term, and insisting that something contradictory is true when it isn't. It becomes true for people, and that whole technique is laid bare and viewable and understandable by anybody willing to watch it and take something from it.
Like, for instance, Trump was supposed to have JFK Jr., who died in a plane accident 20 years ago, at his rallies yesterday, as well as Tupac Shakur, who was murdered about 20 years ago.
Right.
Somehow they were both supposed to come back from the dead and make Trump president through magic, I guess.
Prayer or through prophecy. Yeah, I've been watching.
first, all of us that worked at the voodoo shop were trying to figure out how we were going to resurrect Tupac.
But people gathered in Washington, D.C., and they waited for it to happen. And when it didn't happen, they waited some more. Some of them with promises
yeah.
that something better was going to happen, and others because they refused to let go of it. And it's a frightening look into the start of religions, because these themes are all understandable.
Right.
In trying to understand what is going on around me, I've been watching, again, I do this often. I read and view and listen to outlooks that are far from my own to get a better sense of what's going on. And there is a growing movement of people who have made him a messiah, on par with or greater than the Christian messiah. And yet they believe it, and I listen to them, and their belief seems powerful, and the audience is responding. So, again, we're watching this happen right in front of our eyes.
Right.
And it is magic, and it's I guess, the darkest kind of sorcery. And it's right there, and its practitioners can't even see that it's sorcery.
Because they're trying to, because they don't understand that altering, they're trying to alter reality by nature is sorcery.
Right. And then again, they're not calling it sorcery, but it's sorcery. I remember there was a Buffy episode years ago, I think it was a Buffy episode where Jonathan, one of the minor characters, He did a spell and changed reality where he became the center of attention and the most important person in that particular world that he'd created. It seems very much like that, like magic on that
level.
Well,
in Buffy, we have an even better example of Buffy's sister.
Yes.
That Buffy's around for like 5 seasons, and then they start this season with Buffy going to school with her sister.
Right.
Which, if you've been watching this show, you're like, Buffy doesn't have a sister. Where did the sister come from? And so half of that season, they just go with it. And the other half of the season is some of the characters know something's wrong.
Yes.
But they don't know what it is. They don't know what.
And that's the thing.
And some of that is played for comedy.
If you work with dreams and altered states, that happens a lot. Now there's even a term for some of it called the I wrote my first published thing in this was on this the Mandela effect, about how all of a sudden you shift and you're in a different reality. And most people won't remember the old reality, but some people do and can refer to it. That was like the best example of the Mandela effect that I've ever seen. Like you're just basically, you're on a different channel.
Your show is on a different network now.
Yeah.
Now that HBO is on the network, people are allowed to be all sweary.
Yeah.
We have nudity, violence, and swearing because we're on HBO now.
The first episode of Stargate, was on a different frequency than the rest. The rest are kind of like family friendly. The first episode of Stargate was not family friendly because I believe they started Showtime or HBO or something.
It's that thing. If you're living your own story, occasionally are those alterations. And you sometimes feel like we've changed networks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We can get away with this now? How come we can get away with this now? We couldn't get away with this 2 years ago. How come we can do this now?
Well, I can't believe the conversation is taking place on the world stage now for the most part, or events that are unfolding. It's the same type of thing. It's like you wouldn't have heard this type of conversation openly not too long ago, and here we are. We're in the middle of like this other reality where these things are, if not totally okay, are becoming more okay with the passage of time.
Well, like for instance, me and a bunch of my friends all used to work at a voodoo shop in New Orleans, and with the whole Tupac being resurrected in Vegas thing and one of us living in Vegas, that started out as a not joke. When we first found out that was what was going around, we were not happy about that. But by today, the joke is, you know, of course you're going to ask someone who used to work at a voodoo shop how we're going to bring Tupac back. And of course, we're the ones who are joking about it now, about like, well, at least I didn't spend the weekend resurrecting Tupac.
So where do you think this is headed? How much more ridiculous do you think this is going to get?
I don't know how much more ridiculous it can get.
Okay, that's a good answer.
At the resurrecting Tupac, I didn't know how much more ridiculous it could get in November when they were waiting at the grassy knoll for JFK Jr. At that point, I thought it was beyond ridiculous.
And
so they added another ridiculous element. Let's bring Tupac in. So then, invite Tupac to the rally.
Well, there were Elvis spottings. There might still be Elvis spottings. The back in the day when I kept track of those things, there were active Elvis sightings, and there were, I believe, Tupac sightings as well, continuously after he had passed.
Yeah. So I guess they were trying to gather all the people that cited him into the QAnon rally so he'd show back up.
And alas, he didn't, or as far as we know, he didn't.
It was broadcast live. We would have seen him. It would have been breaking news if Tupac had come back from the dead or if JFK Jr. had come back from the dead to make Trump president. And Saturday Night Live is still live, so they would have said something as well.
I haven't watched Saturday Night Live in years either, so.
I watched Saturday Night Live because there's a certain level of, on some level, that's the people who get their news from Stephen Colbert thing at the next level for people who aren't quite on getting their news from Stephen Colbert level. But on some level, there are some people who understand what happened last week from what Saturday Night tells them during the weekend update. There's a segment of our American population that literally gets their news from Weekend Update and always has for my whole life.
Now, we have popular things in our culture, like The Secret, for instance, comes to mind by Rhonda Byrne, where folks study The Secret and they think positively and visualize and use affirmations and so forth. And they, again, trying to do what magic does, trying to create the present and the future that they would like to optimally have. How does the law of attraction, what is the belief among magicians about the law of attraction?
Oh, all that is true because all that comes from the Kabbalion, and a lot of those new age ideas are basic ideas of magic from very basic books of magic. It's just that almost everyone in my circle had problems with The Secret because there is some misinformation in that book, and the tone of that book is hard to take if you're a serious practitioner. It very much is written for... It's super, super softcore. And because it's trying so hard to be non-threatening about what it's saying, it's irritating to people that just want to watch the show. We don't need all the exposition. But I guess that's also from its time, because in the 90s there are a bunch of authors like Gary Zukav and Byrne who are trying to popularize new age ideas in a way that is non-threatening to middle-aged Christian women.
I'm thinking back on Ralph Bloom, I believe his name was, when he did the same thing with the runes. And I had studied at that time Scandinavian culture and magic and beliefs and mythology and so forth. And the Vikings were very cautious about using the runes and careful with them. And Bloom's approach seemed reckless. It seemed like telling children to play with knives and that it was okay because the knives came from.
But it's the same thing with visualization. You can do a lot of things with visualization, and they're not all good.
Right. And unless you've cleared out your own stuff, it probably won't be good what you're visualizing.
So that was one of the inherent dangers of that book, is it was giving revolvers to children. And the whole popularity of the book and the movie, and it just, the book just came back out again because they just put out another movie again last year.
It was taken from New Thought. A lot of the book was from like the New Thought movement, and New Thought's been part of the American evolution. And I've been contemplating recently how all these steps towards positivity have actually created the negativity we find ourselves engulfed by.
That's Dark Side of the Light Chasers. That book was written a long time ago. that by putting all this energy, well, one of the foremost believers in the power of positive thinking is Donald Trump and his family.
Right.
He owns all that stuff. He's into this stuff.
Right. And that's very clear as well. Arnold Schwarzenegger
he's trying to positive think himself back into being president.
Yeah, Arnold Schwarzenegger believes in that as well, and has been has verbalized that, and he even shared some of his techniques. Although you need to be careful with Arnold. Arnold was known, especially back in his competitive bodybuilding days, not to give you what he was actually doing, but make things up that wouldn't bring you nearer to your goal. But that seems to have changed. But people who knew Arnold, I remember watching, I think it was in one of the early bodybuilding movies, Pumping Iron, that people were making fun of Arnold because he wrote down that he was going to marry into American royalty and that he was going to be governor of California. And he did all those things. He made all those things come to pass. And he did it by making lists and reciting the lists every day and visualizing himself in that circumstance, and then just not accepting other options, just waiting for the right options to pop up and navigating himself through there.
Yeah. And that's part of how manifestation lists work. Even for people at a very basic level. But rather than Rhonda Byrne's The Secret, the book I like for level zero is actually Sincero's You Are a Badass, because she gives you almost the same information as The Secret, but she's completely straightforward about God and gratitude, unlike The Secret, which is mushy about that, and lays it all out. There's no fluff. There's no cotton candy. There's no soft core. It's just there. Take it or leave it. If this is what you want to do, do this.
I read that book when you recommended it a while back. It's been a while, and I can't really remember the details of it, so I'll need to dig it out again and reread it.
Well, that's the book that those of us that used to sell magic for a living use as the book we recommend to people when they start asking these questions about manifesting and the power of positive thinking. Like, go read her book. Read her book and come. She answers all your questions. If those are the only questions you have, her book is the answer to your question.
Well, that's an interesting, that is an interesting thought, and one you've expressed many times, and one I've come to believe in, is that this information is always out there. It's not always in the same form, but it's there. And part of the challenge of studying it in the age that you're in, unless you have a particular attraction to Olympianism or the Norse way or the Arthurian way or whatever, you'll find the information in popular books. It's just you need to know what you're looking for in order to find it.
Right, and a lot of people don't want to go any deeper than that. A lot of people are happy with being a manifestor and having crystals level.
Well, that's the reality that was created for it, and it became concretized into a concept. And like with the more ancient examples, people find that appealing. That the reality with the crystals and the chanting and the candles and the manifestation and so forth.
Right, and that's perfectly fine, but that's the people who are more serious practitioners, who have more serious secret knowledge, are see that in a very different way. Like my tone about that's a very basic book. Sincero's book was a very basic book. We get at Target a few years ago.
Right.
It was so not a secret, every Target in America had it. Perfectly good job for teaching people to do that. But being a manifestor is not witchcraft. And it's definitely not sorcery.
But the skill set in being a manifestor are skills that whatever you practice as a practitioner, you're going to have to develop at some point or another.
Well, you need to be able to jump rope before you can box.
Right.
Right.
But the skills, regardless of how you learn them, once you've mastered those skills, you have them in your skill set, and then it becomes a matter of practicing. And again, like with exercise, what type of physique do you want to build? Do you want to build a bodybuilding physique, a weight lifter's strength physique, a runner's physique, a swimmer's physique? And then depending on what it is you want to accomplish, you have your rituals that you perform and the food that you imbibe and the supplementation that you use. And then you have the same conversations about whether the supplementation is placebo effect or whether you actually need it and how dangerous is the supplementation.
Everything is placebo effect. I was looking at a voodoo shop. It's all placebo effect. It's all in your head. Everything. Well, that's one of the lessons of Wanda is, no, you created it all. It's all in your head. You have to convince yourself that this does this. It's easier if you go along with thousands of years of tradition and
right.
Understand that back in ancient Egypt, they believed this meant this, which means this, which means this.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to. It just works better if you do. But when you start playing with the runes or playing with ancient Egyptian stuff, you're playing with something that is established reality in its own right.
Right. That's why
the
Olympian paradigm, the Olympian reality is one that I've chosen, but it's one of many ways of interacting with the universe. I just happen to like it and feel comfortable with it, and I have a thousands year history propelling me forward with it. But I could have just as easily admitted with something else, chosen something else. So it is. It's in your mind, and it's what works for you.
Well, you and I just as easily could practice Afro-Caribbean religion. We've both been offered that table if we had wanted it, if we wanted to change our diets a little bit, if we wanted to take different initiatory oaths. Both of us could have ended up on that path. Well, I could have been over that path in a more I could have been a for real initiate rather than the weird gray area I'm in.
Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of choice.
But,
it's a matter of resonance because some paths will but it's important to look at the path and not just blindly follow a path, because you might not like where it's taking you. Like one of the problems
right.
I had with the Greek Orthodox path is being told in parochial school, where I learned about theurgy and all sorts of other things, by the way. But one of the things told there was that the whole goal of it was to spend eternity on your knees saying hallelujah. And that did not seem very appealing to me, or even possible, given the fact that I'm attention deficit disordered. So I didn't want to go there. I didn't want to go to a place where the priests were in charge of everything, based on my experiences with the priests in parochial school. So the end of it all, it just didn't seem like the path for me, regardless of whatever positive things the path might have had. So that sent me on a journey to try to find a more resonant path that took me to a better place.
But I mean, that's the thing about mythic and tradition and how those overlap. And when you get beyond being a manifester and believing in crystals, and you choose to take the next step, which usually is the patron deity and tradition, because that tends to come as a bundle. You tend to
right
get chosen by a deity, and then you have to learn how that deity does stuff.
And to find which variant of the deity you're interacting with, because there are several in some systems, countless in other systems. Not as easy as it sounds. I just looked at the clock. We have around 2 minutes left. So would you care to wrap up the thoughts for today that people should have? And again, you recommend Sincero's book for anybody who wants to start on that path.
Yeah, that is the best book for explaining. Secret is still good for visualization. Secret is still the best beginner's book for visualization if you don't want to read Crowley. If you choose not to let Alistair explain visualization to you, you can let The Secret explain visualization to you.
The robot.
But I think that's a good place for someone to start who is curious. Because
mm-hmm.
if you're curious, then you need to learn everything Sincero's book has to tell you about. And you need to think about that if your goal is to just be a manifester, if your goal is to just stay at that level. But once you start pushing beyond that level is when you start attracting attention to the spirit world.
And that is the key that we will start exploring in our next conversation, because that is the part that is left out in a lot of the New Age material, that you will attract attention.
All right. Yes,
thank
and that's
so
how the real stuff begins.
Thank you so much, Satori, and I look forward to our conversations both on and off the air. And thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you called and you're in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures and a healthy and happy new year. Thanks again, Satori.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.